This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Jack Lepiarz, in for Lisa Mullins. The growth of social media platforms has led to people finding all kinds of new ways to make money. Those include getting involved in the commercial sex industry virtually. Emerson College's student newspaper, the Berkeley Beacon, recently reported on students making hundreds or even thousands of dollars a month selling nude and semi-nude photos to clients online. For more on this, we're joined by the two reporters who wrote the story, Berkeley Beacon news editor Dana Gerber and deputy editor Ann Matika. Dana, Ann, thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And we want to mention before we begin, this conversation will include content that may not be suitable for children, along with references to sex abuse and trauma. Ann, I want to start with you. The students you featured in this story work on a platform called OnlyFans. Can you briefly explain what that is and how it works?
All right. So OnlyFans is an online website that creators can post content. And then OnlyFans has fans that subscribe to various creators. And in the past year since the pandemic, this platform has grown in a huge way, and it's become one of the main ways in which a lot of students are doing sex work these days.
But the students in your story, they're not just using OnlyFans. Some other social media platforms were mentioned, Reddit, Snapchat. One of them mentioned they started doing Snapchat in high school. Why are students doing this?
There's a lot of different reasons. I think from the students that we talk to, it's a way to express themselves creatively. One of our sources who goes by the name Weekend Warrior, she isn't really able to, because of health issues, work a 9-to-5 job every day. And so being able to, you know, have this job where she can make her own hours, is very flexible, is really convenient for her. And some people just really like it. And especially within the pandemic right now, it just really makes the most sense for a lot of these students.
Dana, we should also say in some cases, this goes beyond just selling pictures on the internet. You know, some students, they talked about having other interactions with their clients. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So one of the sources in the story, she once video chatted with a client, but that wasn't really something she was comfortable with. And so she mostly stuck to selling pictures and videos of herself, but didn't do that, you know, face to face with clients. One of the women we spoke with would have a pretty one-on-one connection with her clients through Snapchat. So it was private messages. Once she told us about a time she went to a local restaurant near Emerson, and she got 8 pictures of margaritas with her friends. And then she texted one of her clients asking him to pay for it. And he did. So it does seem that some of them established more personal connections with their clients. And that, of course, I'm sure helped them make more money.
What do they say about, you know, are there any concerns about risks with having closer relationships with these kinds of clients? You know, it's one thing to sort of put a picture out into the ether. It's another thing to have, as you said, a more personal relationship with someone.
Yeah. The people we spoke with were very cognizant that this has inherent risks and dangers. They've all gone to extreme lengths to make sure that their identities as sex workers were completely disentangled from their online identities as whoever they are.
In terms of emotional or psychological risks, 2 of the 4 students you featured said they're survivors of sexual abuse or trauma. But the students portray posting nude photos for clients as a mostly positive or even healing experience. And can you explain what they say about that?
Right. So the source that we interviewed, Weekend Warrior, she is a survivor of sexual trauma. And at the point before she started doing sex work, it was something that was really consuming her. Her mental health was at an all-time low, and she felt like her body was no longer her own. And then when she began doing sex work and taking nude photos of herself and kind of getting that autonomy back over her own body and her own self-image, she found it really empowering.
And Dana, you also spoke with someone who had some past trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our sources described being groomed as a child and being hypersexualized by this family member who was grooming her. And of course, while that was not a positive experience, she described, you know, going into sex work as a positive experience because she had sort of embraced that hypersexuality by that point in her life. And so while she did describe having a mental breakdown while she was doing sex work, it wasn't directly tied to that. I believe from what I got from speaking with her, it was sort of compounded with a lot of other duties and responsibilities. And she also described, you know, body image issues and stuff, which sort of, again, ties into the sex work. But by and large, she described sex work as a really positive and empowering and fulfilling experience.
Dana Gerber and Ann Matika are reporters and editors at the Emerson College student newspaper, the Berkeley Beacon. WBUR contacted OnlyFans to request comment, but did not receive answers to our questions. According to the website, it has more than 100 million users and 1 million content creators. For more on the risks involved in the commercial sex industry, we spoke with Lisa Goldblatt Grace. She's a clinical social worker and the executive director of Boston-based My Life, My Choice, an organization that works to protect youth from exploitation in the illegal sex trade. And it works with many of them into young adulthood when some are involved in the commercial sex industry. We asked her about her knowledge of the OnlyFans platform.
When I think about a site like OnlyFans, what I hear from young people that we care for is that it's a place that exploiters will push for them to post pictures. It's often beginning with something that's exclusively virtual, but moving into things that are face-to-face. And as you can imagine, in-person is much, much more dangerous. So in terms of their physical safety, there's a whole continuum there. And I would argue in terms of their emotional safety. And any time that we say it's okay to buy sexual access to another human being, any time we commodify a human being, we've caused harm.
You mentioned emotional health, and I want to talk about emotional health and mental health. You know, some of the people involved in the commercial sex industry and quoted in this article mentioned that they have a history of mental illness or trauma. And we want to stress that not everyone who is doing this has a history of mental illness or a history of trauma. But for those who do, what are your concerns in that regard?
What we know about the commercial sex industry in general is that somewhere between 70 and 90% of women in the commercial sex industry have a history of sexual abuse. I mean, in reading this article, it sounded like the young people felt like they had a choice and they had options, and this is the one that they chose. And what I can say is that I have nothing to say about their particular lives, but that is not the case for the vast majority of young people and young adults that we see every day. Frankly, it's about the absence of choice. If you've been taught that you're valuable only for sex, if you're in a coercive or violent relationship, if you're needing money to pay bills or to otherwise navigate the world in the context of all this, that's about not having choice, right? That's not about having some good options in front of you and choosing the one that feels the best or the most empowering or makes the most sense.
Are there any positives in terms of someone saying, you know, I'm making this decision of what to do with my body? I have control over my body, as opposed to someone else taking control of it.
And I understand that, and I've heard that argument often, and we each have the right to have full control over what we do with our bodies. So this is not me sitting here in judgment. It is me sitting here saying that there is harm in this industry, whether it's felt now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And it's very rare to be able to navigate this egregiously abusive and misogynistic industry without having it exacerbate your trauma or give you trauma if you've never experienced it.
That's Lisa Goldblatt Grace, a clinical social worker and executive director of My Life, My Choice. Lisa, thanks for speaking with WBUR.
Thanks so much for your time.